in the zone, so to speak. I came this morning. First thing I do when I come in is I make coffee, because I know that the sound room people need their coffee. Amen. Right? What did I see on the coffee machine this morning? A sign that says, "Don't use me. The water's no good." Okay? So I'm processing that. I go into the men's room. Nobody wants to know that. But I go into the men's room, and one of the things is running crazily. I don't know how long it's been running, but we're wasting a lot of water. I don't know how to turn this off. It doesn't have a valve where you can see it. Another distraction by the enemy. Patty and I were in the kitchen, and Patty says, "This is nothing. This is just good feed to talk about in your sermon." I did not get distracted by those things. I could have been overwhelmed by all the extra junk, but I decided, doesn't matter. I figured out how to turn off the spigot. I went and bought some water. We have our coffee. All is well with the world, right? Now, if the coffee's particularly strong, it's because Patty and I kind of converted on the fly as to how much coffee we needed for the smaller filter in the bun versus the big monster. So how was it? It was good? Strong? It looked pretty good. So we did all right, Norma. Okay. So I don't need my opening because God just provided that. My opening question was, do you ever feel overwhelmed, outnumbered, unable to cope with life? Yes. We know we all have. We all do. Every day, life bombards us with stuff. My real question is, and you'll see as I get into the scripture later, what is our first reaction when life deals us another punch? I know sometimes my first reaction is stupidity because I think, oh man, what am I going to do? And then quickly, usually, my second reaction is, God, what are we going to do? But sometimes our first reaction is, oh no, or fear, or what am I going to do about this? Rather, it's a transmission in my car or a medical diagnosis or one of my kids does something. Sometimes our first reaction is that gut, oh man, what am I going to do? My question is, when that happens, what do we do and what should we do? Do I cry, why me, and not even think of the Lord and try and figure it out myself? Or do I cry, Lord, what shall I do? I think of the Lord, but my first reaction is still, oh man, what am I going to do? Or the correct response, do I have eyes of faith and cry to the Lord, what are we going to do? The scripture I'm going to share in a little while is out of 2 Kings. It's one of Elisha's many accounts in 2 Kings, and I think you'll enjoy it. But before I do that, I got a little movie clip we're going to show in a minute. Not yet, Mandy. Well, she's so good, as soon as I said that, I could see the movie starting, so I have a few more things to say. But I love old movies. Anybody like good movies? And what's a great plot of a war movie or any movie? The good guys are always outnumbered, surrounded, and should get their butts kicked. But a good movie, what happens? The good guys win. Well, we win. Gotta tell you. This clip that Mandy is now going to show is one of my favorite movies. And some of the older folks will recognize it. You young people will have no clue. But it doesn't matter. Just watch this clip.
But it is the rule. You tried to dig in, Murphy?
Too late for that now. They'll never be able to stay here with 30 men. Put them on backseating time with A Company.
What about you?
I'm going to stay here and see if I can get some artillery working. Better knock on it. You two get out of here. Artillery, I need a round of smoke at coordinate 305-601.
What are you up against?
Fire tanks that I can see and what looks like two reinforced rifle companies. Tell old Joe's to get the lead off. 100 short, 50 right, and fire for effect.
dumb more guts and sense. That tank is loaded with gas and ammo. It'll blow up any minute. Murph! Get out of there! Murph!
On the 9th of August, 1945, a little more than 3 years after his enlistment, and...
You got it. Is there anybody besides Gordy that knew that? Oh, come on. If you were to watch that entire movie, you would see a common theme. Audie Murphy, in that movie, they would have told you at the end, one of the most decorated war heroes of World War II. Probably the most decorated, actually. Through that entire movie, Audie Murphy, the only direction he went was toward the enemy. He never, even for a split second in that movie anyway, contemplated going the other direction. He's outnumbered, overwhelmed. He should have gone with his guys and just beat feet out of there. He went toward the enemy. His first reaction was attack. Go forward. So on your insert, if you want, you can put it right over the title. Do you ever feel surrounded by the enemy? Well, the word that we should do is we should attack. We should go forward. Whatever word you want to put there, that's the direction you should be going. So I hope you enjoyed the movie clip. Now you all want to go home on YouTube and watch the whole movie, because it's a good movie. 2 Kings chapter 6 is where we're going to go. We're going to start in verse 8, so I'll give you a minute to get there. I don't know if it's an account that most of you have read or not, but it's Elisha and one of his servants are the ones that we're going to focus on. But 2 Kings chapter 6, starting in verse 8, would make a great movie. Right? The good guys win, but it would make a great movie. So let's read that together. Everybody there? 2 Kings chapter 6, we're going to start in verse 8. It says, "Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, 'I will set up my camp in such and such a place.' The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, 'Beware of passing that place because the Armenians are going down there.' So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places." We'll stop there for a minute. Little background. The king of Aram or Armenia, which I believe is Syria, or became Syria. I'm not a historian, but at that time, that country was warring with Israel. This wasn't a full-on like war, like World War II, but there were skirmishes back and forth, and they were kind of bugging each other. And what happens here is the king keeps setting up these traps for the king of Israel. And the guy never shows up. He's always warned by Elisha, the man of God. God is at work behind the scenes through Elisha to warn the king of Israel. So the point there is God's hidden power is always at work in our lives. We may not always see God working. It may not always be this big, ooh, God did this miraculous thing. But God is always at work. He knows the plan. He's always at work. We need to remember that. So even when we feel overwhelmed, even when life's got us, we think, on the run, we need to remember God is always behind the scenes working. God's hidden power. So God was working through Elisha, warning the king about these traps. That's basically what the king of Aram was trying to do when he says, "I will set up my camp in such and such a place." He's setting up traps for the king of Israel. And he time and time gets foiled by God intervening through Elisha. If we continue to read, this enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, "Will you tell me which of us is on the side of the king of Israel?" He thinks somebody's a spy telling the king. His guys respond, "None of us, my lord and king," said one of his officers, "but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom." So Elisha's not there, but God is revealing to Elisha what the king is planning. Second point, real quick. God working behind the scenes in our lives enrages the enemy. The king was enraged because he couldn't figure out how the king of Israel kept avoiding his traps, to the point where he thinks one of his own guys is a spy or a traitor. Finds out that it's none of those things. It's Elisha the prophet, who is in Israel and knows what's going on in his very inner court, in his bedroom, it says. So the king, smart guy, says, okay, I got to get rid of this Elisha guy. We're going to see what happens. He says, go find out where he is, the king ordered, so I can send men and capture him. The report came back, he is in Dothan. Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. I think the point to remember here is the enemy is powerful. The king, in this account, sent horses and chariots and a strong force to Dothan, where Elisha was. Dothan is in Israel's territory. This guy was able to send a strong force across the border into the heart of the king of Israel's territory. Dothan, if you were to compare where the king hung out and Dothan, is about a 10 or 12 mile difference. So he's pretty close to where the king of Israel is, but he's going after Elisha because he knows Elisha is his problem. So he sends this strong force, horses, chariots, and a strong force, and they surround the city. Now, I don't know how big Dothan was. Picture Jersey Shore, a strong force, and they surrounded the city. That's a big enemy. Enough guys to surround an entire city. I don't know how big that city was, but that's a lot of guys. Sometimes in my puny little world, I feel surrounded by the enemy. Some days I am just bombarded and I think, man, I am totally outnumbered. That must be how these guys felt when they woke up and saw that they were surrounded. But we'll get to that in a minute. So at this point, the king realizes that Elisha is the problem, sends this strong force, surrounds the city. And now we're going to see in a little while how Elisha reacts. And a side note that God revealed to me as I was studying this was the enemy of our soul, Satan, is after the Elishas especially. He's after the men of God. He's after the leaders. He's after the pastors in a strong way because he knows if he eliminates those people, the rest of us are easier targets. So keep that in mind and always be in prayer for Don and Sherry, for your leaders, because they are always under attack. Because the enemy knows if he takes out a Don Peters, the rest of us are weakened. So keep that in the back of your head when you're praying, and always keep those people in prayer because they need it more so than anybody else. We see an example of how God knows the plans of the enemy and provides special revelation so that we can protect ourselves from the enemy. God was providing special revelation to Elisha so that Elisha could warn the king as to what was going to happen. That was not just for then. God still provides that revelation, knowledge, that wisdom to us. Our role is, of course, to be in God's presence and be able to recognize those cues, those things that he helps us with. So it's not just for then, for the prophets. It's not just for the leaders. God provides that revelation knowledge to all of us when we seek him. So when you think you're surrounded and you can't handle it, go to God in prayer. He can and will reveal his plans to you and the answer and the solution. So don't ever feel that you're alone and can't handle it. God is always there, and he can reveal those things to us. Another side note, once warned by God, if we do not act appropriately to God's provision and put on our armor to do battle, we have no one to blame but ourselves. If God gives us what we should do, and we choose not to do it, that's on us. So we've got to keep in mind that we not only have to hear God, but then we have to act accordingly. If you want to jot down this note, Ephesians chapter 6, starting in verse 10. I'm not going to read the entire thing, but it talks about putting on the armor of God. If God is going to reveal something to me to help me out of this jam I'm in, now I need to take that, and now I need to put on my armor, and I need to go after it. I need to attack, I need to advance, I need to take the battle to the enemy and take care of the problem. In Ephesians chapter 6, it talks about the armor of God. It says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." This is a spiritual battle. Yes, my transmission breaking might seem very worldly, but it's not. The enemy will use any method he can to get me. If my transmission breaks and I lose my witness because I'm so mad, the enemy wins. Anybody ever had a transmission break? Dave, you know, it can drive you over the top, right?
No,
it can't. No. Yeah, you're not driving anywhere at that moment. But picture this scenario. My transmission breaks. Maybe I'm 100 miles from home. I travel for a living. Maybe I'm up over the mountain in Elamsport somewhere where there's no cell phone. I got to walk 10 miles to get reception. And then there's no mechanics over there. I got to get it towed to Williamsport. Cost me $300 because I don't have good car insurance. And then Denny tells me it's going to cost me $3,000 to fix the stupid thing. That could put me over the top. But not if I've got God working behind the scenes. I've had transmission problems. But you know what? I've had car problems, and I think, man, if this had happened over there, I'd be in trouble. But it happens right around the corner, and I got a mechanic across the street. How many of you went to South Dakota last year? Where did the brakes go bad? All right? You pulled off, you got it fixed, right? God is behind the scenes working. You guys could have broken down 300 miles from nowhere, which is easy out there because everything's 300 miles from nowhere, right? But you didn't. You broke down somewhere where you could get it fixed. So the scheme of the enemy, I'm going to break this bus. God behind the scenes said, go ahead, I got it covered. I know where they're going, right? So no matter what your situation, put on your armor. And the armor of God, if you read Ephesians, the full armor of God is powerful. How can any enemy stand up against that? We have God on our side. Come on. All right? Question is, do we really believe that? Some of us are very quick to listen to warnings from God or to heed his word or to do what he says. Some of us are a little slow. I believe it, but sometimes I forget. Sometimes I try and take care of it myself. How stupid can I be, right? Some of us will listen to worldly counsel. Maybe I'll ask Robert's opinion on something. Maybe not, but sorry. Right? But maybe I'll ask Robert something because I know he knows about computers. Or he knows about something. So I'll ask Robert. And I'll go with what he tells me. and never ask God what I should do. A lot of us are real good at that. We'll seek that worldly counsel, but we never ask God what we should do. So some of us are a little slow at times. Maybe some of us really don't believe that the battle is really that big. Just ordinary stuff. Maybe we don't think that it's really that serious when things happen to us. But the reality is that the enemy will use all kind of methods to get after us. The important thing is how we react when we're attacked. And we should just push right back. All right, let's continue. We're in 2 Kings still. We're going to start at verse 15, I think, is where I left off. Now remember, we're backtracking. The city is surrounded. Elisha doesn't know the city's surrounded yet. He hasn't gotten up and had his coffee yet. He's still inside. But we're going to see what happens when his servant wakes up. Okay, so starting in verse 15. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. Listen to his response. "Oh, my Lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. "Elisha, don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And what did Elisha do? Elisha prayed, "Oh, Lord, open his eyes so he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Who's got the bigger army? Elisha's got the bigger army. But the servant couldn't see it. Because remember, God does not always reveal everything in this spectacular way for us. The servant, I don't know how long this servant had been with Elisha. Right? Maybe a day, maybe a couple years. I don't know. But if he'd been with him any length of time, he's seen God work through Elisha over and over and over. But yet his first reaction when he walks outside is, "Oh, crap." He's like, "What are we going to do?" He had no belief that God had him covered. He works with Elisha. Come on. Elisha had been warning the king of Israel for how long about all these traps and ambushes and stuff. But yet this guy goes out and he's like, uh-oh. He wasn't focused on God. He was focused on the problem. We need to focus on the solution to the problem, which is God, not the problem. In the movie, Audie Murphy wasn't focused on the 500 Germans. He was focused on the solution. I'm going to blow them all up and I'm going to get going. All right. I don't know if that's a good movie for in church, but I liked it. All right. So the servant goes out and he is terrified, is what I hear when I read that. I hear, uh-oh, we're in big trouble. Elisha immediately says, "It's okay. Don't be afraid." And then he prays. And the Lord opened the eyes of the servant. He revealed to the servant that he had it taken care of. So the servant, fearful, went out. "I'm surrounded. I'm in trouble." How many times do we go into our day like the servant? We go out and we're unprepared and we act all surprised when the world throws us a curveball. Instead of knowing when we get that curveball thrown at us saying, no big deal. Got this one. So we need to be more like Elisha and less like the servant. I've seen God work in my life numerous times, but sometimes I go out unprepared. Why do we do that? Why are we like the servant? I go to work sometimes and I get there. I have my devotion time in the morning. I have 40 minutes in a car where I'm worshiping or praying. And then I walk into the office and it's this chaos. And sometimes I fall into the trap. I get sucked right in. Why do we do that? We need to keep our focus on God, not on the problem. Luckily, as I mature in my walk, I get better at catching myself and refocusing and backing away from the problem for a minute, and it's usually okay. But sometimes we get ourselves caught up in that. We lose track of God, like the servant. The point I'm going with this is, even though we go out unprepared sometimes, God is still there. When we regroup and refocus, God will reveal things to us and help us get through the problem if we refocus on Him. If we choose to handle it ourselves, then, yeah, God's not going to be so revealing. He's still behind there working, I believe, because He loves us, and He knows we're not the smartest sometimes. But when we seek His face and pray, He will reveal those answers, those solutions for us, and help us through them problems a little quicker, I think. So let's see how Elisha responds. We know the servant was a little, oh no, but Elisha, I hear calm and reassuring. I hear personal words of encouragement. He didn't scold the servant. He didn't say, ye of little faith. He didn't do any of that. He said, don't be afraid. And then he goes on to tell him that those who are with us are more than those that are against us. And then he prays, God, reveal to the servant so he can see. He's calm, reassuring. He teaches the servant. He prayed. He tapped into God's power. He prayed, open his eyes so he can see. Elisha was focused on God and his strength, not in the enemy and his. Believers need to ask God to reveal himself. They need insight and illumination sometimes into what's going on around them. Sometimes we don't see the big picture of what's going on. And God will reveal himself if we ask. Do you believe that? I believe it. But we have to believe it and we have to act. We have to do it. Elisha knew what he needed to do. He didn't get afraid. He didn't get, oh no. He just reassured the servant and prayed, and God responded. Sometimes life surrounds us, and sometimes it's not just little stuff. I know life is full of big stuff. Maybe I got problems with my marriage, or I got a kid that's doing drugs, or I got health problems. Life is full of big stuff. But rather it's the little stuff or the big stuff. My reaction should be the same. I've got to believe that God is bigger than the problem. And I've got to act out of faith, not out of fear. We need to be more like Elisha than the servant. Elisha knew the battle and the enemy were real, but he also knew God's power and provision were stronger. Mark this down, Psalms 23. You don't have to turn there, but Psalms 23, verse 1 through 3. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is my stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advance against me to devour my flesh, when my enemies and my foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. What powerful words. No matter what the battle, no matter what's coming against me, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Nobody, right? I should not fear anything if I believe that the Lord is my salvation. Elisha, calm, confident, saw the problem, but more importantly, he saw the solution was through God. That's how we need to live our lives. Easy to say, hard to do. I know that. But that's what we need to do. Now, if I wanted to, I could stop the sermon right there. But I don't want to. So, I'm going to keep going. This was actually two sermons, and I thought, nah, it's one sermon. A couple practical lessons, and then we're going to see the end of the story. If you're ever in a situation, this is a side note that God said, add this in there. If you're ever in that situation where you're helping someone else through the problem, act like an Elisha. How many people have ever gone to somebody for prayer, or they go to somebody with a problem and they get a lecture? They get scolded. They get, what are you thinking? You need to do this. And they never get prayed for. Does that ever happen? That's sometimes, I think, why we don't go to other people and ask their opinions. Because we know we're not always going to get good opinions. We need to be, so if anybody ever comes to you, be an Elisha, Robert, Dave, Gordy, be Elisha. If I come to you with a problem, don't scold me. Wrap your arm around me and love me and comfort me and pray with me. I don't expect you to have the answer. I'm coming to you because you're one of my brothers and sisters in Christ. We're like one of these guys. I don't need lectured. I need Elisha'd. So if you're ever in that position where somebody comes to you, give them advice, yes. But your biggest thing should be love them, comfort them, instruct them biblically, but pray with them. That's where the power is. If you have the answer, that's great. If God reveals the answer to you to give them, absolutely. But don't be beat them up. Pray with them. Instruct them. Teach them. God uses people and His Word and brings about powerful things. So just that's the side note. So be an Elisha. Don't be a servant. In the New Testament, Paul modeled this well. If you look at almost any of Paul's writings, he always is very personal and very encouraging, praying for the needs of those he's ministering to. Sometimes his word is stern. Yes, he's instructing them and teaching them, but he's encouraging. He's praying for them. If you looked at Ephesians chapter 1, verse 17 and 18, this is one example. I keep asking that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the glorious Father, may give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you may know Him better. I pray also that the eyes of your heart will be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which He has called you, the riches of His glorious inheritance. He's positive. He's praying. He's personal. Be that way. Help those that need your help by being on their side. They don't need beat up anymore. The enemy's already doing that. They need encouraged and loved, and they need instructed, and they need prayed for. Okay, the rest of the story. If you're still in 2 Kings, obviously Elisha is delivered from the enemy. Okay, Elisha and God win. I'm going to tell you the ending right now. But look how he does it. It's so cool. 2 Kings chapter 6, we're going to start in verse 18. And I'm going to read a verse and then I'll hit a point with it. It says, as the enemy came toward him, Elisha prayed, okay, to the Lord, strike these people with blindness. So he struck them with blindness as Elisha had asked. I could have written that so much differently. Remember, Elisha's in the city. It's surrounded by the enemy. But he has all these chariots of horses and fire. I would have said, get them. And I would have think, man, just wipe them out. But that's not what he did. Elisha could have asked God for that. And I believe God would have done that. But he doesn't. Elisha says, strike these people with blindness. So he struck them with blindness as Elisha had asked. God answered Elisha's prayer. So now this enemy is still coming toward them, but they are all blind. They can't. They don't know where they're at, what's going on. Listen to what Elisha does. This is so cool. Elisha tells them, This is not the road, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you're looking for. Now remember, Elisha is the man they're looking for. I just think that's funny. God has a sense of humor. I don't care what anybody says. So Elisha says, I will lead you to the man you're looking for. And he leads them to Samaria. Samaria is where the king of Israel hangs out. This is where the main Israelite army is of the time. He leads them right into enemy territory. After they had entered the city, Elisha said, Lord, open the eyes of these men so they can see. Then the Lord opened their eyes, and they looked, and they were inside Samaria. What do you think their reaction was? You think the servant was scared when he was surrounded? These guys just got led right into the middle of the city of the king, who would probably just as well kill them as well. So picture their reaction now. Now, these people don't know God, so they're terrified and have nothing to look forward to, except they're probably thinking, we're done. So God could have killed them in Dothan, but he chooses to strike them with blindness and let Elisha lead them to the city. Elisha knew that the army of flesh was no match for the power of God. He takes them right into the city. The men, I'm sure, filled with terror, expecting certain death. Next verse. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha, shall I kill them, my father? Shall I kill them? Now remember, this is the king of Israel asking Elisha the prophet. Now I believe the term my father is a respectful type thing. He knows that the prophet has God's ear. He knows that. So he asks Elisha, shall I kill them? That's his first response. Let's kill the enemy. Look at Elisha's. Do not kill them, he answered. Would you kill men you have captured with your own sword or bow? Set water and food before them so that they may eat and drink, and then go back to their master. So he prepared a great feast for them, and after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away. And they returned to their master. So the bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. God always has a plan. He could have just flat out killed this enemy at Dothan or on the road or once they're in a city. When the king asked Elisha, Elisha should have said, yeah, go ahead, now's the time. But he didn't. Why do you think God did that? Because God is a God who is always trying to save the lost. He could have just killed them all. But through that act of mercy, I wonder if any of those men from that army got it. Even if just one realizes the power of God and goes with God. So even if just one of those men were saved, I think that's a good point. But God is always... He boldly demonstrated his power, but then he showed mercy. He could have killed them all or had them killed, but he showed mercy. And not only did he let them go, but he fed them a great feast, made sure they were in good shape, and then turned them loose. And at least for that moment when those people went back and saw their master, the raiding stopped for that moment, at least in Israel. Elisha's victory, designed to demonstrate God's love and mercy and power. For some of those men, it may have led to a life through Christ, through that witness of God's power. For many, I'm sure they went back the same way they arrived and never got it. But God gave them that opportunity to get it. So God is powerful. God works behind the scenes. God knows the enemy, but God is bigger than the enemy. We have to believe that God is bigger than the enemy. Keep in mind, as I close, I'm not closing just yet, so don't jump out of your seat yet, Robert. I got a little more. But as I get ready to close, when believers are serving the Lord, Satan will do his best to hinder our efforts. This is a battle. The more you are in the Word, the more you put on your armor, the more you act like Elisha, the enemy is going to keep coming after you. Don't get complacent and think you won this battle, you're good. Because he's going to keep coming. I want to encourage you, but I also want you to know the reality is, as long as we're on this world, we're in a battle. It doesn't end until we join God in heaven. We need to keep fighting the good fight. We need to keep our armor on all the time. And we need to be watching each other's backs. If I see somebody coming after Gordon, I'm going to get around there and I'm going to help him out. None of us are alone. Remember my prayer earlier. None of us are alone. Don't try and handle things on your own. You're surrounded by an army. Elisha was serving and using his gifts and having a powerful effect on the culture of that time. Every time we serve and use our gifts, we will have a powerful effect. You may not see it, but we will have a powerful effect. I think it's important to know that. As we serve, the enemy is going to try and stop us. But when we push through and keep serving, we are going to affect people powerfully. Not just a little. We're going to powerfully affect the world we live in. Satan will use human situations to stop us from serving, but the power of God is always greater than Satan's efforts. This is a story that I found online. It's from an unknown source. It's about a medical missionary. It says, while serving at a small field hospital in Africa, I traveled every 2 weeks by bicycle through the jungle to a nearby city for supplies. This required camping overnight halfway. One of these trips, I saw two men fighting in the city. One was seriously injured, so I treated him and witnessed to him the Lord Jesus Christ. Then I returned home without incident. Upon arriving in the city several weeks later, I was approached by the man I had treated earlier. He told me he had known I carried money and medicine. He said, some friends and I followed you into the jungle, knowing you would camp overnight. We waited for you to go to sleep and planned to kill you and take your money and drugs. Just as we were about to move into your campsite, we saw that you were surrounded by 26 armed guards. The missionary laughed at this point and said, I certainly was all alone in that jungle campsite. The young man pressed the point, no, sir, I was not the only one to see the guards. My friends also saw them, and we all counted them. And because of those 26 guards, we were afraid and left you alone. At this point in the church presentation, one of the men in the church jumped up and interrupted the missionary and asked, can you tell me the exact date when this happened? The missionary thought for a while and recalled the date. The man in the congregation then told this side of the story. On that night in Africa, it was morning here. I was preparing to play golf. As I put my bag in the car, I felt the Lord leading me to pray for you. In fact, the urging was so strong that I called the men of the church together to pray for you. Will all of those men who met with me that day please stand? The men who had met that day and prayed together stood. There were 26 of them. You saw that ending coming, right? We are always surrounded. God has always got it covered. This missionary, alone in the jungle, surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. He didn't see them. God did not reveal that to the man. But he revealed it to the enemy. You guys better back down. I got this guy covered. 26 of them, a continent away, praying for that man. Do you believe that stuff? If we believe that, then how can we let life kick us around like that? We are never alone. We are always surrounded. We always have a cloud of people around us, of angels, of people. We're always covered. So now you guys can come up. This picture is from Washington, D.C., about, what, 3 weeks or a month ago. When were we down there, guys? I don't know. I don't know how many people gathered in Washington in the mall. Somewhere in there, we were probably there. I don't know. Oh, there we are. We are always surrounded. These people all are powerful. Every one of them. Believe in God, believe in His power, and we're there worshiping together. But yet, sometimes we try to handle it ourselves. Don't try and handle it yourselves. You got 30 people in this room right now that could pray for anybody that needs it right now. So as these guys get us into worship again, remember, you're never alone. When life's closing in, when things seem hopeless, gather around with your cloud of witnesses. God is there, whether you see Him or not. But gather with your friends. Gather with those people that you know are strong prayer warriors. Get in the Word. You are never alone. So as the band plays and we close, if you feel surrounded, if you feel you're overwhelmed, there's 30 people in this room right now that would love to pray with you. If you are like the servant and don't quite believe it, come forward and we'll show you. God can reveal His power to you. He can help you through your problems. And when He does, you'll look back and you'll say, wow, God does have me covered. And then the next time it's easier. If you believe God can cover it and you already are seeking something and dealing with something, we'd still love to pray with you. Like I said, there's a bunch of us right here. We can pray right now that God reveals His power to you in that situation. If you don't know Christ, you can know Him right now. I don't know if there's anybody in the room that's in that position, but if you don't know or you're not sure, if you're like the servant and you need to renew that relationship, we can pray for you there too. So if you need prayer, come forward. The band's going to close us out.